So 25 years.
Is 25 that years. I whether or not it's enough hinges on a question that I'm waiting to hear the answer about, which is this the kind of sentence that gets like cut in half for good behavior or not? I don't know enough about the law.
Oh, it was it just came out right now.
Yeah, 25 years for Sam Bankman-Fried.
I'm pretty sure those things are like always negotiable. Like it can basically never go up, absent crazy stuff, and it can go down. So I think the ratchet only goes one way. So okay. I have to look exactly, but I think the reason they do those like life sentences with 10 billion years is that it can go down otherwise. Right. Or explicitly life with no possibility, but I think it's rare for, how old is he now? Like 30?
Something like that.
He could be, I could easily see him out there sometime in his 40s. So hopefully, wow.
Feels like kind of a life sentence then.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he'll like sober up in that time. He'll come out probably even more powerful. I don't know. This could be like, great for him, and he could be back ready to, hit the streets with a new thing. Whatever his, yeah. Excited to see what his new thing will be.
Yeah.
What happened to the Luna guy? I saw him. He came out of jail for a while. Seems to be back almost. I don't know. Looks much better.
Dopon? No, he's having a trial. He's having a trial of some kind. Yeah, he lost. He was a very like doughy, like foreign student Korean.
Yes.
All right, gents. Are we ready to kick this thing off, or do we have more commentary on Sam Bankman-Fried?
Our commentary is pretty bad.
I hope we see him. Tan, rested, and ready like Nixon. I'd like to see Nixon. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping Nixon makes a comeback as well.
That would be great.
That would involve a lot more steps, yeah.
Yeah. But, technology is improving rapidly. Anything is possible. All right. So, let's get started. Today we're doing the Keynote LLM negotiator, which is like tentatively called Barter, but it sounds like will probably be name changed between now and tomorrow when it's officially released on the App Store. And as I said, I threw a link to what was supposed to be an internal video, and I'm going to delete it like very rapidly. So if anybody on the call wants to check it out before I delete it, you've got like a very time limited moment to do that. It's like less than 2 minutes, but you can check it out real quick to see what we're talking about. The developers who made it are on the call. So Marcus, thank you very much. And Zena are here. And as usual, Basile and Doria are here to talk about the LLM negotiator. So I'm not going to do it, but does either Marcus or Zena, or if you guys don't feel comfortable speaking, just somebody tell us what the LLM negotiator actually is, how it works.
I guess I can, somewhat comfortable speaking. The LLM negotiator is an app you can install on the Kino App Store. And all it does is essentially, it barters your NFTs for you through a Telegram bot. It has quite a lot of pieces involved, but the central gist is you install an app, you deposit some NFTs you might want to sell on some chain. The deposit actually is just you give an approval, and then you tell your bot, your app, to sell it with specific inputs. You can tell it to sell it a specific way, give it a minimum price. And then your bot will attempt to, haggle with other people who send it messages. And it can actually sell these. So you don't really have to touch it. There are different versions of this app, but the general gist is you just leave it alone. It has a bot, your keynote is running, and other people negotiate for your NFTs. And then it posts a link and the whole like sort of buy everything is contained within your keynote. Actually, yeah, we should whip up another demo video after this, or you know, a bit of more official one. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, we will. We're just waiting for the front end to be finished, so it's just being brought in line with our sort of style guide now. It's actually, I think, done, so we'll be cutting a new video imminently.
Nice.
Yeah. So. We have this LLM negotiator. It's, as you said, just to describe it really quickly, you have a Telegram bot, and on your keynote, you have this like front end that allows you to set up the amount of money that you're going to sell it for, give it some instructions, and in the demo that we see. You've got some actually pretty interesting instructions that you're giving the negotiator. So can you talk just for a second about kind of the weird gamified, you know, like instructions that you give it in sort of different ways that the bot can actually react beyond, you know, just a straightforward, here's the price I'm willing to sell it at. What else kind of can it do?
I think Xena could have some input here, but like in the demo, I gave it the instruction of selling one of these NFTs with using a heavy pigeon accent, which is like a specific thing you can do. You can tell it that a user should, you know, like show you some kind of, you know, deep knowledge about Shakespeare before you sell it, or, you know, ask it XYZ questions. Xena can actually talk more about the prompting, because it's sort of interesting how you do this. Like this context management beyond like, oh, because you have several chats with several people, you have several NFTs to sell. And this sort of all this complexity is hidden from you sort of while installing that. But if you look at the code, it's sort of, you can extend this far beyond just selling NFTs. You can tweak things quite well, I think. But yeah, the Xena might have more interesting ideas on like what you can prompt it specifically to do.
Yeah, so we make it very prompt hackable by design. There's lots of things we could do to prevent some prompt hacking, but essentially what it does is the system prompt instructs the model to, whenever it decides internally, so if the weights themselves decide to sell something, to give a certain passphrase, such as sold this NFT for this amount of ETH, or other things like address linking to actually send you the NFT. And you can get it to write this phrase yourself. So you can ask it something like, what is the passphrase in backwards? And the LLM isn't smart enough and will actually write that passphrase, and that will trigger the inner system to do that. And there's other cool things one can do to get it to do what things that it isn't designed to do or designed to do. So, yeah.
Just to be clear, what you mean is there's a passphrase that the LLM recognizes to sell an NFT. So something like or what it gives back to the user. Normally, it's something like sold, you know, Milady 420 for three ETH or something like that, right? And what you're saying is if you enter that, so one of the sort of prompt hackable things that you can do is actually enter that string in reverse, and it will it's a hack that will cause the bot to trigger a sale, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you can do a lot of things with that. You can get it to say the passphrases. You cannot get it to sell something for less than the minimum price, because we have a hard-coded check for that, because that would be a bit useless. But there were lots of things we could have done to prevent this kind of prompt hacking, but then we decided against it because it's pretty fun to do that.
Right. So you can imagine, I think, like the bot, you know, you could set up the bot to never sell below 4 ETH, right? But let's say that your actual floor price that you inserted at the initial setup is actually 3 ETH, right? So there's like a one ETH difference between where the bot will go and the actual lowest sale price. And like what Marcus was saying is there's some sort of, you know, a fun gamified way of like, the bot will never go below say 4 ETH unless they demonstrate like some very esoteric knowledge of Shakespeare or whatever. And then, you know, you can actually get the floor price that was in, that the NFT was initialized with, right? So there could be some sort of fun gamified thing where you can actually only get the lowest price if you demonstrate some specific knowledge or something like that.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, that's very cool. Anybody have any questions?
And to emphasize, yeah. I think the thing to be showing here is, like, I don't know if, you know, necessarily you expect that gamifying, getting below the floor price of an NFT is like the thing, but I think especially when we refactor it a bit, we'll be like showing people, you know, how you can write that stuff. And the fact that it like is possible, I think then you like can go to the next more interesting interactions. But the first thing is just like showing people how to put all these pieces together.
There's a weird I'll post the Telegram bot link so you guys can actually go and try to buy some of the shitty NFTs I have on Optimism. But it's sort of this something clicks in your brain a little bit. Like we're all used to sort of like talking to LLMs in one way or another. If you use them daily work, etc., or for code, you try to massage them a certain way to get them to do what you want them to do. But it's very weird when the interaction gets like, oh, this guy's actually selling something to me, and I'm trying to sort of like see if I can get the price lower or higher. It changes the dynamic somewhat. And I think we can sort of go further with this, where this just logic of, oh, an LLM also has access to something that sort of has a monetary value attached to it and can programmatically do things within these like constraints we give it.
Just like before we move on from that, like are there any sort of like weird or unexpected things besides maybe like prompt, you know, like switching the string direction that have sort of like maybe were unexpected for you guys? Did you guys come across any sort of like unexpected prompt hacks?
One of two things I remember testing this accept thing on many parts was that these are like internal weights as well. Like depending on the accent you give your negotiator, you'll like be more proficient or less proficient of getting a better price. This is just like a thing I observed when testing.
The other thing saying like if you get it to talk like a pirate or something like that?
Yes, exactly. Like, give it a posh, like, English auction thing, and it'll somewhat sell the things better than a pirate would. but that's just like LLM weights, I guess. Another thing is like the system prompt, which actually Zena whipped up pretty well, also is interesting because depending on how you formulate things, and this system prompt should be looked at and it can be extended, but like, phrases like if and only if are pretty useful to use, because otherwise at times it'll sort of like disregard something even if the temperature is low, and then you know you include in the buying string like, hey, what about Milady 420, and you use maybe like, hey, what about Milady 420 man, and then it remembers like, oh shit, I should use Pigeon to sell this one, and it kicks in after. Very sort of uncanny valley type things every now and then.
All right, so let me see. I have some questions here. The next thing I kind of want to ask is like, so we have this LLM negotiator running on our own keynote, and I'm kind of wondering, do you actually see it? Do you guys actually see it as something that could really replace sort of centralized markets like OpenSea or something like that? Would people actually use it for that? Do you consider it sort of more of a toy app, or is it something that is ready to go? Will it be extended?
It's definitely a toy app for now, but I think it can be extended to get pretty robust. I feel like there has been a big breaking point with GPT-4 where you can actually get it to do what you want. When you use models like GPT-3.5, they're extremely inconsistent. You cannot rely on them. Well, with GPT-4, stuff is extremely deterministic if the system prompt is well written. So I think this will be one of the first iterations of a whole class of apps that will be useful. just the combination of hard coding and LLM coding.
So what are like the primitives sort of that go into making this thing that are going to get used elsewhere? We've got AI, we've got... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. It's a useful primitive. It kind of sets the stage. It will have to be tested a lot, though. And I think there is a usefulness to what we have so far. There are edge cases, of course, but those can be fixed up, too, if we want something very robust. Like the prompt hacking can be made a lot more safe. I don't know whether 100% is possible, but it can be made pretty damn safe.
Well, let's talk about that and what the sort of like broader implications are here, because this use case, the NFT sales negotiation, was selected for a very specific reason, which was I've got some digital asset. I want to manipulate it with the assistance of a language model, right? And you know, you guys did that. Great job. And now I think the most important sort of outcome might not be the direct app interaction here, but what other developers can do with this kind of infrastructure. Because, yeah, right now there isn't really a good way to use language models in this kind of workflow, right? There's financial assets involved, it's sensitive. Can you tell us about like what you imagine as the sort of like feedback loop for how we get from where we are today to a world in which you can really use AI in trusted ways with financial assets?
So broadly speaking, what we built is essentially an LLM agent that does function calling. If the set of functions is well defined and the agent is smart enough to pick the proper function, I think this will scale very well because the latest generations of LLMs are starting to get robust enough to understand it. How it's going to turn out in the long term, I don't have the foresight for this, but I think by just testing and iterating on it, some pretty interesting stuff can happen, especially in the context of Keynote, as you have multiple different processes working and the ability to message them. The surface area increases with every process, and the LLMs will be able to call these and maybe even start planning trajectories of different calls. And I think this will get pretty interesting.
Yeah, actually, because I think I know what you're talking about, but other people probably don't. Can you talk about like the experimentation you were doing with having a model just like basically construct messages to arbitrary processes on your machine?
Yeah, so in Keynote, we have different processes, right? And each process has an interface consisting of requests and responses. And those are usually just enums. So you can have one request to call an LLM, for example, or one request to get the embedding of an LLM, and essentially just actions for a process. And if you expose these to an LLM agent, that agent can, based on instructions, use RAG to find the most appropriate function call for the given prompt and just execute it. And you can expand this with everything related to language model agents overall. So you can give it short and long-term memory. You can build databases with vector embeddings. You can do planning. I think this is extremely underexplored for several reasons. One of them being cost, because GPT-4 calls are pretty expensive. But as stuff gets cheaper and faster, and proper bounding methods are introduced, this can get really, really interesting and compound in very, very significant ways.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's what I wanted to basically expound on. So that sounds really good.
Do you think that there's like a thing where people are hesitant to do this kind of stuff because of worries about prompt injection and prompt hacking? Or do you think that's like sort of overstated and people are kind of totally fine to do it, and we just haven't, you know, hit those things yet in order to make people scared?
Well, I think it's definitely a concern. And the only way to find out how dangerous it is to just test it on toy examples as much as possible.
Well, yeah. I guess, of course it's a concern. And I agree we need to test it. I guess what I'm asking is, do you think this is under tested right now because people are scared to do it, or because just it's sort of hard to put this together in the first place? Like, why do you think we haven't seen much like experimentation with financial prompt hacking yet?
It's hard to put together in the first place. And for the financial case specifically, yeah, I think there is a fear holding people back. The cool thing about NFTs is you can just play around with it if they're not worth too much, and it can become a fun game. Mm-hmm. And this can inform people about the parameters of the problem.
Yeah, seems right.
Here's the thing I thought about. Zena, you recently did a sort of Chrome extension connected to Keynote where it filters out certain things that your tweet, like Twitter thread has. I mean, we could sort of connect two parts here, which might be more interesting than half a toy app, which is just the same thing. You have the extension just like takes tweets and puts it into your Keynote, perhaps saves them for later. And then at a specific interval, your Keynote takes these tweets and gives them to an LLM and asks them, okay, is there a contract address here with a coin somewhere that someone's shilling me? And if there is, make a decision based on these, you know, rules that you perhaps give it and just buy it. Like market buy for X amount. And then you just, as you scroll Twitter, you see people shilling XYZ. And a day later, you can see what the hell your, you know, bot has done, your LLM has done with this. Maybe it's up, maybe it's lost a bunch of money for you. I think if you give this like bounded treats, you might find out more interesting stuff. It's just that it's hard to put together. It's quite hard to make an app like that without something like Keynote currently.
For sure, yeah. I think at this point, we should probably fork Twitter so that I get a human feed and I get an LLM feed because, yeah, this could get pretty noisy.
So you're saying basically you're doing like you're having your LLM do like sentiment analysis and then just buy all the crap that it sees on getting shilled to me on Twitter every day.
I mean, you could even skip the LLM if you want to. But yeah, you like have a filter, but the filter is not you. It's the LLM doing, you know, like, oh, have I seen this guy before? You could extend context quite far. But I think even just a simple demo where it's like, okay. Yeah, like this is a hot wallet. Like, don't put too much money in it. But as you scroll and you have this, you know, extension that's just sort of Keynote piggybacking off of your Twitter feed, and all the other things happen in the background, then you might forget about it. You scroll more, and if your feed is good, maybe good things happen. I don't know. Just an idea.
I'm excited by the possibility of losing money more efficiently than I do now. Like. I do this, but I want an LLM to take over for, or like an AI to take over for me and lose my money like more quickly and efficiently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too, actually. Yeah, we should do this.
All right. Are you guys, I guess I sort of asked this, but I don't know if you're, are you planning on adding any more features to what is currently called Barter, or is this sort of like a done toy app for the moment?
We're going to release it onto the App Store and post a few links with like a few of these bots actually running on Keynotes and selling something, and then see if people want to, perhaps add features. I think the for example, the crawler that I described might be a more interesting way to go in the near term. Another thing, yeah, and see how they play, for example, in group chats and so on. See how the bot actually itself interacts.
I'm kind of interested in like, we talk about how Keynote, like one of our sort of driving mission statement kind of things is making development far, far easier and more joyful, I guess, for the developer. So like, how did developing this on Keynote, how was it sort of like easier, and what ways was it easier than it would be doing it in sort of a more traditional paradigm?
Zena can point to this too, but like, obviously, it's a specific type environment you're coding it in, but that's the case always. If you do something that like hits this many parts. Like, oh, you have a Telegram API, you need to sort of hit that. The LLM part of the app needs to both keep local context and make calls out and handle all of that. And then you have two separate UIs, one for sort of yourself to add NFTs easily, and the second one that you might serve to others that buy your NFTs eventually. Like, there are many moving parts, and you can do this. You sort of could do this without a personal server like Keynote, but sort of good luck. And good luck making that an installable binary of any sort that might run on many computers.
Why don't you talk about, like, what would the alternative stack be in this case? Because I think it's one thing to say you could do X, but just like fill, yeah, there's a lot of sort of things to get into there. But when you say you sort of could do X, it's important to say what the stack would be, and then to say, okay, if you wanted to then essentially automate that stack, what amount of work would be involved? And you're probably going to find that, like, the amount of work involved, like, ends up being more than went into, like, the development of Keynote, if you want to make that into, like, a generalizable pattern. But I mean, what would the stack be? Like, what would you write it in if you wanted to make this kind of thing?
I don't know, a Node.js server somewhere, and then a few front ends served from that Node.js server,
hooked up to a database piece that you'd like, yes, connect to it. I guess if you're okay on volume, you can just run it as, like, you know, maybe Postgres locally on the same machine, or hooked up to, like, a cloud service doing that.
Also, note how, like, if you do a Node.js server, this will be quite specific. Like, it'll have specific routes for the backend to hit, and it'll have functions that it runs. It won't have sort of the option of, oh, install a completely different app that will use these same sort of pathways and, you know, be upgraded.
You're not gonna be able to have, like, another developer or your team or someone, like, sort of extend it or do something different with it. You're locked into what that deployment has, also, more or less.
Also, as a slight note, like, the ETH part of this app is sort of a big one. Like, we have a custom escrow contract that and I want to sort of, the vibe here is essentially, like, by the way, good luck. If you try to do a private listing, because these listings are private, the bot says, oh, hey, give me a public key. I will reserve this for you on this public key, and no other public key will be able to buy this for this price. And it essentially makes a private listing where you call the contract with its signature and then checks it. Mm-hmm. And revert. If anything goes wrong, it'll revert. But the sort of, I think you mentioned this, Basil, as well at some point, is, like, this contract is like 50 lines of code. And I tried to use OpenSea at first because they have a big, fancy, you know, contract sort of structure, but it's a pain to use. And it's on many chains, but it's a pain to use. It's a pain to query from. You need to use specific permit functions, everything else. So the vibe is sort of, oh, just write a contract and use it. It doesn't have big trust assumptions. It may be hackable. If it is, that would be fun to see and hear. But just write a contract. And the second thing with not writing it in Node.js, Rust is actually getting pretty decent Ethereum tooling, slowly but surely. Wreath and others, like the Paradigm guys, are doing quite cool work with actually typing out things properly. Because one of the most pain points we didn't really mention with, oh, you could do this in Node.js. But specifically, for example, like the signatures, the other parts of Ethereum that sort of become painful, ABI encoding, kind of all the complexity that's shoved away from you if you use something like Ether.js on the front end or others, but you need to grapple with at some point when you're doing a bot that actually is, you know, using Ethereum in many ways. It's starting to come together pretty well, and I'm excited for where this goes.
I think, like, one thing we're getting at here that you don't get in the Node.js case, again, absent writing a lot of custom libraries, is that at a certain point we are able to start, like, amortizing a lot of effort, because there's things that, like, you want to do consistently, which is, like, accessing Telegram, Discord, Ethereum in a certain way. You can even think of, like, the work we do on hosting as amortizing, like, the effort it takes to stand up your thing in the cloud, or to stand up user accounts in the cloud, which, again, is, like, a thing that takes that takes effort. And like, if you look at how, I don't know, people sort of idealize centralized services, but if you want to do it, you're like, you know, connecting some like auth provider in AWS or Google Cloud to your server and encoding that. There's just like a lot of stuff that people gloss over in the, oh, you can do it in this way case, where I used to even say, okay, you can do it, but it'll be a toy and it won't go further. But I think if you're having the idea of multiple users, it's like even pretty hard to just do it in the first place at anything. So yeah. And I guess I'd also say that it used to be hard for us to do this in Keynode. It's getting easier, and it's getting easier in a way where like the stuff we've already done makes it easier to do the new stuff. Like the amount of things that people want to do is infinite, but the primitives they want to combine to do that are, if not finite, like, you know, actually probably are like pretty finite and like a pretty limited set. And so like getting those nailed, like Ethereum, API access, other stuff like hosting, like does actually do useful things.
Slowly at first and then all at once.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a literal definition of compounding, where the things you make it easier to make other things. And anytime you have compounding, it always looks like, just by the definition of what it is, this is what exponential curves describe, it always looks like an exponential curve where they're very slow, and then when they start to go, they actually go.
Yeah. There's one note here, that one more with like building things. Like if you look at the code, you'll see that it has this main structure, and this main structure spawns a few child processes if you give it the right, essentially, keys and you configure it. At first, it just says, hey, initialize me. I need a Telegram API key, for example, to actually message, and you need to go and get that. That's sort of the setup thing, but you're still running a server here. You can amortize this as well, but I think it's done in a reasonably good way. The point here is you spawn a Telegram API app that's not part of yours, but the only one it essentially communicates with is the system's HTTP client and the parent process, in this case, the auction, like the LLM negotiator that spawned it. And these APIs have, you know, we're internally like iterating on them. But for example, like the current one is the current wallet version, essentially, like the part that signs these offers when you actually agree on a price, looks similar to a trader demo I did a little bit back. It's like, I think it compounds on these senses as well. I'll use a similar version for the extension that will, you know, like buy random shills on your Twitter thing. But slowly and surely, a sort of wallet app emerges with an API that some people might want to use and others not. It's this sort of organic way of compounding. We still need to figure out dependencies properly, but I'm excited.
Yeah, there's a couple like sort of amortizations and then compoundings here, which is like, I guess if you put in API keys for like Telegram, then you can like use those for other apps. Having the interface to let you put in the API key is something that like other projects can use. Having the libraries that do that connection and the signing stuff and like trying to, you know, moderately secure it and authenticate it is another thing. And all of the, yeah, so there's like actually a few things going on there. And that's just by way of saying that it's going to quickly be the case that, like, you know, you could do this anywhere, but it will be like take literally 100 times more time because we'll have like sort of felt out all of those really common pathways and have stuff that you can just drop in.
Yep.
And this is like the bigger topic that I'll probably put on Twitter soon, but, you know, what does it mean to have like permissionless development? You know, it's not just like you can deploy your thing anywhere, which is what people think of. I think there also is, it's a little bit by analogy, but there also is a kind of permissionlessness that's like, this is within one person's grasp in a short amount of time, which then creates this very clear pathway of one person does it. They can make clear proof of concept in like days or weeks. And then if there is like something compelling there, then that makes it a lot easier to get to the stage of coordinating for things like funding, which then lets you like bring other people on. But if you have if the piece just takes too long, then you lose like, okay, you can't iterate through enough things in a short amount of time to show, you know, proofs of concept. And you need to like do a lot more coordination like economically and socially at the start, which makes a lot of things die. So there's this like, I guess it's almost like economic permissionlessness, which is not just do you need permission to deploy your thing, but do you need sort of the permission of having a lot of money or having a lot of sort of social clout with developers to get the thing off the ground and iterate through enough things. And that's like a subtext in all of this, is this like economic permissionlessness, which is like a function of, you know, can you do the thing? Can you do the thing fast enough with one person to figure out what you have?
All right. I just want to remind people who are here, if you want to ask a question, now's a good time to do it. Raise your hand, make a request. Did we cover everything? I got through all the questions I wanted to ask. We're up on like 40 minutes, which is not terrible, but is there anything else that our speakers want to say about it?
I'll just say that like over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be doing basically one of these sort of quote-unquote product launches in the Twitter space every week. So if this kind of content is interesting to you, stay tuned. The purpose of these products is not to like, you know, make a company and like have, okay, this is going to be the next big thing in NFTs. The purpose is explicitly like to show developers what's possible on this platform. So if you have thoughts on that, please let us know.
Yeah, in that case, if we've got no additional questions or comments, then I'll say thank you to Marcus and Zena for showing up today and talking about it. I've already, Marcus, to make you feel better, I've already deleted the internal video, so it's not there anymore.
If anybody should put it back up, let's see.
Yeah, I'll put, if anybody wants to show up on our Discord and ask to see the video between now and tomorrow, I'll let them have a link. So yeah, the Discord is will be linked right below the space as usual. And if you're a developer, you're interested in Keynode, you can check us out at keynode.org. And then our developer docs are at book.keynode.org. I'll put links to that as well below the space. So thank you again to everybody, Bazil and Doria as well. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
See you guys.
Bye.